Aren't you glad that you're a Christian? Okay, let's say last week's memory verse here. A joyful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit dries up the bones. Well, today I want to continue talking about this good medicine from Proverbs 17:22, having a positive attitude, a cheerful disposition, a happy spirit. Now, there are a lot of different ideas out there on how to be happy. According to Lucy in the comic strip Peanuts, happiness is a warm puppy. Not a cat, but a puppy. Certainly not a warm fish. Well, I didn't look into them, and so I'm just going to put up the popular attribution of these quotes. What is happiness? Happiness is nothing more than good health and a bad memory. Happiness is a well-balanced combination of love, labor, and luck. Happiness is not being pained in body or troubled in mind. Happiness is the interval between periods of unhappiness. Happiness is always the serendipitous results of looking for something else. Happiness is a place between too much and too little. Happiness is when what you think, what you say, and what you do are in harmony. Success is getting what you want. Happiness is wanting what you get. And then, of course, there was Jimmy Soul in his 1963 song, "If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, never make a pretty woman your wife." So from my personal point of view, get an ugly girl to marry you. Well, I don't know about that, but it sure is a catchy song. As I mentioned last week, most people want to be happy. You're going to be hard-pressed to find someone who says, you know, I'm just not into that happiness thing. Happiness may be good for some other people, but it's just not for me. Our founding fathers, they even put it into the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's been pointed out that those who say they don't want to be happy, well, they find a certain happiness in their unhappiness. Augustine, or Augustine, however you want to pronounce that, who lived in the 4th and 5th centuries, he put it like this: every human being, though, of whatever kind or quality, wishes to be happy. There isn't anybody who doesn't want that, and want it in such a way as to want it above everything else, or rather, in such a way that whoever wants other things wants them for the sake of this one thing. Well, last week I spent quite a bit of time talking about the idea that happiness is a choice and how we are actually commanded in the Bible to rejoice. We looked at the work of Dr. Sonia Lyubomirsky, a social psychologist whose extensive research on happiness resulted in this graph. And according to her research, unlike what most people would think, only 10% of our happiness comes from our life circumstances. 50% comes from our genetics, and 40% comes from our intentional activities, meaning that 40% of our capacity for happiness is within our power to change. And that's a large chunk. There's the illustration of the boy who was asked if he was happy. He said, "No, I won't be happy until I've graduated from high school and gone to college." He was then asked in college if he was happy. He said, "No, I won't be happy until I've graduated from college and secured a good job." Well, after he had a good job, he was asked again if he was happy. He said, "No, I won't be happy until I get married and have a family." Well, after he had a family, he was asked again if he was happy. He said, "No, I won't be happy until I'm retired." You see, he was never going to be happy. A British psychologist named Dr. Robert Holden, he made the statement, "Beware of destination addiction, a preoccupation with the idea that happiness is in the next place, the next job, and with the next partner. Until you give up the idea that happiness is somewhere else, it will never be where you are." The fact that Paul was in prison when he wrote Philippians. It makes the theme of joy in the book pretty remarkable. Biblical joy doesn't depend on others. It doesn't depend on external circumstances. It comes from within. It's an attitude. It's a mindset more than a feeling. And so today, I want to continue giving some biblical suggestions on how to be happy. Keep in mind, as always, this sermon is just as much for me. Again, there are too many people, as the song says, looking for love in all the wrong places. Well, there's also too many people looking for happiness in all the wrong places. As Augustine went on to say, so a happy life is the common aim of all. But how one gets to it, how one makes one's way to it, what route one follows in order to arrive at it, that's what the argument is about. Last week, we looked at the importance of getting the gratitude attitude and thinking on heaven daily. So how to be happy? Number three, you need to change the way you look at things. Change your perspective, your paradigm. It's been said, you can't be optimistic with misty optics. And that little play on words is very true, because if your optics are misty, right, the way you see things, your perspective, then you'll often have a dim and negative view of life. It isn't raining rain to me, it's raining daffodils. In every dimpling drop I see wildflowers on the hills. A cloud of gray engulfs the day and overwhelms the town. It isn't raining rain to me, it's raining roses down. It isn't raining rain to me, but fields of clover blooms, where any buccaneering bee may find a bed and roam. A health then to the happy, a fig to him who frets. It isn't raining rain to me, it's raining violets. Robert Loveman. I've heard it said, the way you see the world is usually the way the world sees you. That's interesting to think about. We need to change the way we look at other people. In Matthew 7, in verse 3, Jesus said, why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? He was talking about hypocritical judgment. But I have discovered that some people just like to go around looking for specks in other people. And guess what? If you look for specks in me, as in anyone, you're going to find them. I heard about a guest preacher who got up to speak, and he realized that the local preacher had forgotten to tell the congregation that he was going out of town and had asked this guy to fill in. And so he was getting a bunch of really funny looks, and they were looking at him, and he said, brethren, now I know you don't know me, but if you knew me, you'd like me, because I'm a good fellow. Well, I think it's the way we should approach people. Wouldn't this world be better if folks whom we meet would say, I know something good about you, and treat you just that way? Wouldn't it be splendid if each handshake, good and true, carried with it this assurance, I know something good about you? Wouldn't life be happier if the good that's in us all were the only thing about us that people would recall? Wouldn't our days be sweeter if we praised the good we see? For there is a lot of goodness in the worst of you and me. Wouldn't it be fine to practice this way of thinking too? You know something good about me, I know something good about you, Lewis Shimon. We also need to change the way we look at our circumstances. Again, Paul was in prison, and you'd expect the guy to be complaining of a storm. But instead, we find him saying this in Philippians chapter 1, verses 12 through 14. Now I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel, so that my imprisonment in the cause of Christ has become well known throughout the whole Praetorian Guard and to everyone else, and that most of the brethren, trusting in the Lord because of my imprisonment, have far more courage to speak the word of God without fear. If there was anyone who had a right to complain I mean, he could have easily filled this letter with a bunch of self-pity and complaints, but instead, Paul chose a different perspective. As they say, the only difference between a stumbling block and a stepping stone is the way you look at it. When life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. Bloom where you are planted. Play the cards you were dealt. When the waves of life start rolling in, go surfing. Two men looked through prison bars. One saw mud. The other saw stars. From an outward point of view, the early Christians had difficult lives and very little that would cause rejoicing from an outward point of view. Now, I love the example of the apostles in Acts chapter 5. They had been arrested, and the council was trying to figure out what to do with them, how to shut them up. And a Pharisee named Gamaliel gave some advice, and then it says, they took his advice, and after calling the apostles in, they flogged them and ordered them to speak no more in the name of Jesus and then released them. So they went on their way from the presence of the council, check this out, rejoicing that they had been considered worthy to suffer shame for his name. And every day in the temple and from house to house, they kept right on teaching and preaching Jesus as the Christ. Now, if you're having trouble with this, it might be helpful, as in the old 1960 Haley Mills movie, that's Pollyanna, of course, to play the glad game. Now, I've mentioned it before, and in case you haven't seen it yet, which you should go and do, well, it was a game that was taught to her by her father, and it consists of trying to find something to be glad about in every situation. For example, one Christmas in the missionary barrel, instead of a doll as she wanted, there were crutches. And in that situation, well, they decided that they were glad that they didn't need them. You see, it's all about perspective. As it says in that Pixar short, don't get a kink in your think. Now, that's something else you ought to watch. You want to be happy. You need to get the gratitude attitude. You need to think on heaven daily. You need to change your perspective. Number four, don't seek after money. Bigger houses, better cars, faster computers, newer cell phones, clearer TVs, fatter bank accounts. That's what we want. That's what we think about, what we worry about. That's what motivates and drives us. In this culture, it's what has become our priority, our preoccupation. And as the Roman proverb says, money is like seawater. The more you drink, the thirstier you become. I was told there was a relative of mine who made a goal to make $1 million. And after he achieved his goal, he was asked if he was happy. Do you know what he said? Now I want $2 million. Ecclesiastes 5:10. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. A rock star was being interviewed one time. You can find this on YouTube. He said, "You're asking if I'm happy. Listen, I've got 87 million pounds in the bank. I've got a Rolls Royce. I've got three Stalkers. I'm about to go on the board at Manchester City. I'm part of the greatest band in the world. Am I happy with that? No, I'm not. I want more." Back in 2005, Time magazine had an interesting article called "The Real Truth About Money." And in it, the author said, "Clinical depression is 3 to 10 times as common today than 2 generations ago. Money jangles in our wallets and purses as never before, but we are basically no happier for it. And for many, more money leads to depression." Well, after looking at the evidence for that, here's the conclusion. Everyone needs a certain amount of money, but chasing money rather than meaning is a formula for discontent. Too many Americans have made materialism and the cycle of work and spend their principal goals. Then they wonder why they don't feel happy. There's an old Porter Wagoner song that says, How many times have you heard someone say, if I had his money, I could do things my way? But little they know that it's so hard to find one rich man in 10 with a satisfied mind. Do an internet search sometime, and you'll find a host of articles written on the reasons why you don't want to win the lottery. I mean, the troubles that will bring your life far outweigh any of the good things from the money. In the parable of the sower, Jesus said of the thorny soil, "These are the ones who have heard the word, but the worries of the world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desires for other things enter in and choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful." And notice how he referred to it as the deceitfulness of riches. It's not what you think. Focusing and seeking and longing after money, it can cause a lot of problems. In 1 Timothy 6, Paul said, "But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." And I'm sure you've seen that. I have. Now, there is nothing wrong with having or making a lot of money. God blessed Job and Abraham and David with wealth, and yet they were definitely heroes of faith. It's all about our focus and our priorities. Right? Is money what we love? Jesus told us to lay up treasures in heaven. It said that John Newton went to go visit a family that had just lost everything that they own in a fire. And he went to the woman and he said, "Madam, I give you joy." Just surprised and ready to be offended, she said, "What, joy that all my property is consumed?" And he said, "Oh no, but joy that you have so much property that fire cannot touch." I think the saying is true. Happy is the one who has learned to hold the things of this world with a loose hand. Life is short, and yeah, it's nice to be comfortable. But we really, really just need a few things to get us through the here and now. Hebrews 13:5, "Let your character be free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you." I like the anonymous poem. "We squander health in search of wealth. We scheme and toil and save. Then squander wealth in search of health, and all we get's a grave. We live and boast of what we own. We die and only get a stone." And that's pretty good. I read about a London paper that was offering a prize for the best definition of money, and they awarded it to a young man who sent in this definition: "An article which may be used as a universal passport to everywhere except heaven, and as a universal provider of everything except happiness." Now, I think it was Arne Garborg, the Norwegian writer, who made this argument. "It is said that with money you can have everything, but you cannot. You can buy food, but not appetite. Medicine, but not health. Soft beds, but not sleep. Knowledge, but not wisdom. Glitter, but not beauty. Fun, but not joy. Acquaintances, but not friends. Servants, but not faithfulness. Leisure, but not peace. You can have the husk of everything for money, but not the kernel." Instead of seeking after money, we ought to be seeking after wisdom. Proverbs 3:13-14. "Happy is the man who finds wisdom, and the man who gains understanding. For her proceeds are better than the profits of silver, and her gain than fine gold." You want to be happy, you need to get the gratitude attitude. You need to think on heaven daily. You need to change your perspective and don't seek after money. And number five, believe the truth of Romans 8:28. And we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, those who are called according to his purpose. I learn as the years roll onward and leave the past behind that much I have counted sorrow, but proves that our God is kind. That many a flower I longed for had a hidden thorn of pain, and many a rugged bypath led to fields of golden grain. So the heart from the hardest trial gains the purest joy of all, and the lips that have tasted sadness, the sweetest songs that fall. Then as joy comes after sorrow and loves the reward of pain, so after earth is heaven, and out of our loss is gain. Agnes L. Pratt. If you could see the outcome, you would rejoice. This is a cursed earth, but God is ultimately in control. I read about an ocean liner that was caught in a storm, and for 2 days the wind raged and the passengers were frightened. And at last, an anxious passenger climbed up with great effort to where he could see the pilot. And climbing back down among the passengers, he spread the glad tidings. He said, "We are all right. The ship will make port, for I have seen the pilot, and he is smiling." And you see, with the great pilot in charge and helping to direct our lives, we can know that we will make port. As it's been said, it's going to be okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. The thing is, suffering and difficulties can have benefits and reasons behind it that we cannot see and we do not appreciate. We just have to trust that God knows what's best and that he causes all things to work together for good to those who love him. God knows what's best, and sometimes he says no to our prayers, even our desperate prayers. But you've got to realize that there is no one more on your side than God. I like the way Phil Sanders put it. The moment of pain often blinds us to a larger picture, one only time can paint. What seems cruel today may be perceived very differently in time because God's plan is not finished. Our limitations often prevent us from seeing the big picture. There may even be benefits down the road for the next generation. I don't know. Yes, this world can be pretty rough. It's supposed to be. But as Jesus said to the apostles in John chapter 16, "These things I have spoken to you, so that in me you may have peace. In the world you have tribulation, but take courage. I have overcome the world." So, you want to be happy. You need to get the gratitude attitude. You need to think on heaven daily. You need to change your perspective. Don't seek after money. And believe the truth of Romans 8:28. At least, that's what I think. Again, Christians have more to be happy about than anyone else on earth. Many are the sorrows of the wicked, but he who trusts in the Lord, loving kindness shall surround him. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, you righteous ones, and shout for joy, all you who are upright in heart. Psalm 32:10-11. I'd like to finish with the words of the song, "Sing and Be Happy." If the skies above you are gray, you are feeling so blue. If your cares and burdens seem great all the whole day through, there's a silver lining that shines in the heavenly land. Look by faith and see it, my friend. Trust in his promises grand. Often we're troubled and tired, sick with sorrow and pain. There are others living in sin, blessed with earthly gain. Take new courage. We cannot tell what the morrow may bring. When the dark clouds vanish away, then your heart truly can sing. Oft we fail to see the rainbow up in heaven's fair sky. When it seems the fortunes of earth frown and pass us by. There are things we know that are worth more than silver and gold. If we hope and trust him each day, we shall have pleasure untold. Sing and be happy. Press on to the goal. Trust him who leads you. He will keep your soul. Let all be faithful. Look to him and pray. Lift your voice and praise him in song. Sing and be happy today. That good medicine, the positive attitude, cheerful disposition, and happy spirit can be yours.